Australia on the Triple M network. Triple M! Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
G'day, Jimmy.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Good, mate. Good. Good. Just driving home from the Origin. Sort of give you a call, give you my thoughts on the game, and also want to chat about regional jobs.
Thank you very much, Jimmy, because you went to Suncorp tonight to, or yesterday morning or last night. Oh, we're all parts of Australia. It's all different times. Bloody hell. But, mate, you were there for the third State of Origin, Suncorp, mate?
Yeah, mate. I was there. I was down at Tax Street before the game. Got to catch up with the Triple N's very own Dan Kinnaid and Emma Lawrence. So it was good catching up with them.
It was funny. I was driving to work listening to them, and I was listening to Gerds because Gerds goes for New South Wales and Wendell Saladell goes for Queensland. Yeah. It was hilarious. Now, you would have heard it because you're at the game, and I was laughing. It was brilliant. Yeah. Mate, what was it like at the game, Jimmy?
Mate, it was a bit quiet, actually, compared to previous years. Still great atmosphere. Suncorp never lets us down, but at the end of the day, the dev rubber clearly showed. It was a bit quieter in some areas. But never seen so many New South Wales win at the game too. So it's good to see they came out in numbers. But yeah, brilliant game. What I'm a bit disappointed about though, mate, is Billy Slater, man, in the series. Look, only played two games, but gets to be in the series.
This is what a lot of people are saying. Now, for other areas who don't give a rat's ass about rugby league, what it is, we have State of Origin between New South Wales and Queensland. There's only three games they played. Previously this year, New South Wales have won the first two matches. So this one wasn't for anything because New South Wales got the shield, but it was for pride. Anyway, Billy Slater plays fullback for the Queensland side, non-rugby league people, and he played tonight. He captained in his last State of Origin match. He captained and won, but the thing is, he didn't play in one of the games. He's only played two State of Origins, and of course, one of those was in a winning side, but he got man of the series. How does it work, Jimmy? Don't know.
Well, mate, I don't understand. Look, if it was up to me, I'd be giving a Damien Cook or James Tedesco. Now, I'm a Queenslander through and through. I love Billy. Billy's my idol, everything like that.
But, me too.
Mate, like, at the end of the day, he played two games. Like, we're saying Greg Inglis is man of the series, he played two games. We're saying Cameron Smith's man of the series because he didn't play any games, but he was on the sideline cheering Queensland on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just couldn't believe it. Like, New South Wales, they deserve to win the series. Like, you know, their captain, Boyd Cordner, you know, everyone was calling for his head at the start of the series. He ended up being one of their best players overall, you know what I mean?
Mate, Jimmy Maloney, who is an absolute brilliant man, a great player for the Panthers, great for New South Wales and Australia. Seriously, his two matches, I thought Jimmy was going to get it.
Yeah, look, he had a horrendous game three. He played absolutely terrible.
He was tired. He was tired.
Yeah. he was terrible. But if he had a 5 out of 10 game tonight, he would have got man of the series overall. But, mate, his game was more like a 3 or 4. Intercepts, seen bins, missed tackles. Just wasn't Jimmy, unfortunately. You can't give man of the series to Jimmy Maloney just based on that. So, yeah, like I said, he would have been my man in the series pre-game, but, mate, he had a shocker. So,
yeah. All right, mate.
Yeah, almost home now. But, yeah, sort of give you a call, tell me your thoughts about the game. But, yeah, you were talking about the regional jobs.
Yeah, there's a report out that says there's a staggering 40% of all new jobs are located in New South Wales. The other states are pretty high. But I want to know, in your area, is there a crisis? And what about yours, mate?
Mate, so I come from a rural country town on the Darling Downs called Dolby. That's where my mum and dad are from. And I was an accountant for 7 years. I just recently transferred to become a teacher. So I'm an accounting teacher by trade. And as I graduated from my teaching degree, I looked everywhere in regional for my role in accounting. But unfortunately, regional areas, regional schools, because it's a specific subject, they just couldn't offer it for me. So, mate, coming from the Darling Downs, Queensland, I've ended up moving to Sydney for my role.
As a teacher?
As a teacher. I ended up moving to Sydney because that's where the work was. I tried Brisbane, tried Toowoomba, Dolby, out west to Mount Isa, right up to Townsville, mate. It was just because my subject's a specific area, just couldn't find anything. In Sydney, there was plenty of jobs down there. Now, I'm a country boy through and through, but I have to go where the work is. And like I said, I'm back up here during the holidays, but just have to go where the work is.
Wow, mate, that is so interesting. And that'd be, Jim, that'd be interesting to find from other people. Did you do your course and then where did it take you? Even though I could imagine when you were doing it, Jim, you wouldn't think, oh, I'll end up in Sydney after doing, did you study in Queensland?
Mate, I studied in Queensland. So I studied with the Queensland curriculum and everything, the Queensland system. So, you know, when the job was available there, it was like, well, I don't know the system, but I've got to go where the work is. It's pretty much had to learn on the run.
Wow. That's really interesting, mate. It'd be interesting to hear from other people too. Is that what happened? You studied and you went, oh my God, I've got to move here to get a job. And as you say, yeah. Jim, you put all that, what is it, 4 years that you had to study?
Well, it was only a 12-month degree for me because I already had my accounting degree.
Right, I get you.
But yeah, for most starting up teachers, yes, it's a 4-year degree. Now, for primary school and maths teachers and science teachers, not as bad because it's a popular area. But,
yeah.
You know, if you do history or geography or those, like, areas that you specialise in,
yeah.
And you can't be that flexible. And the regional schools, they don't offer those subjects. You know, they only offer the basics, you know. And so, you know, they have to move to Sydney and Melbourne and all that capital city and all those places.
Now, let me tell you, Dolby's got, what's the population of Dolby, Jimmy?
15,000.
Right, you've gone from 15,000 to 3 million. How was it?
Oh, mate. Well, mate, I tell you what. I used to complain if I didn't get a car park right on the front doorstep. Now I'll be cheering if I got a car park 3 blocks away.
You know what? I used to get drunk in Dolby because I've got mates. Do you know Terry McGovern in Dolby?
Mate, I have heard of him, actually, would you believe?
Oh, one of Dolby's biggest drinkers.
He's a relation to Pat McGovern, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would have to be. It goes for St. George, can't help it. Anyway, geez, he can drink. He got me on the drink one Friday night with all these cattle farmers.
Was that at Mary Barry's commercial hotel by any chance?
Yeah, probably. And do you know what I was doing? They were just boom, like that, and I'm there. I couldn't keep up. So I was just moving my beer to the side and hiding them. I could not keep up with them. They were unbelievable. And then I went home and watched footy with him, and oh, I won't tell you what I did with all his shoes. Oh, fair dinkum. I just wasn't well.
Don't tell me you did a chili, mate.
What's that? No, I didn't
Don't
do a shoey. No, the next morning, I'll tell you, the next morning, because, God, they can drink, the next morning I see all the shoes underneath the clothesline. I said, what happened there? He said, you know how you were sick last night? That's where it landed. Oh, Jimmy. Oh, he knows how to drink. Well, listen, mate, I better let you go. Enjoy the rest of your holidays, mate.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the update, Jimmy.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Go to Queenslanders.
Yeah, they're finally out of win. 18-12. Thanks, Jim. That's Jim from Dolby. Interesting story. Did his teaching degree and had to move to Sydney. We've got Michelle from Maitland. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, how you going?
Not too bad. Not too bad. How are you going?
Not too bad. Work in the morning, but yeah, I'll get there. I'm a nurse, so it's all to do with the health costs. Okay, I've worked both in Queensland and New South Wales.
Yeah.
I've only been in New South Wales for the last 3 years now. And the ramping. That's nothing uncommon, happens everywhere. And a lot of it is we actually get bed locked upstairs. And what people don't realise is that you've only got, like, say, for instance, 15 or 20 beds in your accident emergency department. Nearly everybody needs blood tests. So they come in, by the time they get a blood test, then you've got an hour to wait for the results and then a doctor will review them. By the time that all happens, nearly everybody is in there in a bed for at least an hour and a half. So if you've got, you know, 30, 40 people in the waiting room, you know you're going to have a few hours wait.
Right, and that's the reason.
Well, that's part of it. Also, too, the beds are bed gridlocked, so there's no beds to shift people onto. But the problem with that is, you'll have a lot of older people and younger people that have had accidents or whatever that are waiting rehab or just need that little bit of extra time. They could quite easily go to a rural hospital and get the care they need. And unlock an acute bed in an acute hospital, but they refuse and they have the right to refuse and they're not made.
Right.
They
right.
should be made. Like where I am at the moment at Maitland, we have 4 hospitals within a 40K range, even less, that are rural or, you know, pretty well much rural hospitals that could do it. And if a patient doesn't want to go over to one of the other quieter hospitals, they don't have to. So they're taking up acute beds.
Right. Now, why we're looking at this story, because hospital overcrowding wait times is worst in Tasmania and Territories. But, Michelle, is it true that AMBOs, if they're taking a patient to the hospital, they can't leave until that patient has been seen by the doctor or admitted? Which one is it?
It's admitted. So, in other words, the AMBOs pretty well much now... I work in a rural hospital as well, which I work in both. So I work between Maitland, which is a big hospital, and also work in a rural hospital. My rural hospital, we don't have a doctor there. Sometimes we don't even have a doctor on call. So if an AMBO rolls in, they hand over to the nursing staff. So AMBOs cannot leave until they've handed over to the nursing staff. That's all it is. And that's if there's a bed available. But if the patient's not overly sick and they can go into the waiting room, well, then they've only got to hand over to the triage staff.
Right. Would it alleviate the pressure? If you know some of the private hospitals, why don't they open? Because a lot of people have private health cover. Why don't they open some sort of ward or emergency centre where people can go in who've got private health cover to alleviate the system from the public's...
Belmont Hospital has an accident emergency. A few private hospitals do it.
Right, okay.
There's a little one in Maitland, and it's supposedly getting its own accident emergency setting. But what I think what would alleviate a lot of the problem is I believe that everybody, including people on a pension, because then they won't do it either, is if you present to a hospital with something that could be treated by a GP, you should have to pay the gap or pay what you would pay to go to a doctor.
Yep.
And that way then, and I mean, people say, oh, I can't get into my doctor. You know what? I've rang up the after-hour GP centres around here. I can always get in. You ring up as soon as they open and it's like, yep, you slotted in. But it might be 10 o'clock at night or whatever. But that's what time they're rocking up at the hospitals anyway.
And, well, you know what, Michelle? If I had to pay $60 so I didn't have to wait 6 hours, I'd bloody do it. Wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, the after-hours GPs all bulk bills.
Right, yeah.
I've had to take my daughter to a few of them at night time where she's, you know, tonsillitis or whatever. I've been at work and haven't been able to take her during the day. And, or, you know, because she's in her senior year, so she gets sick, she has to have a medical certificate. And I have never had trouble getting into an after-hours GP, and they all bulk bill.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, really interesting points there too.
So, and I mean, and as I said, like, and I've seen so many acute beds being taken up by people that should be in the outer hospitals and they're not, and they use the excuse, oh, family can't visit me. Half of family only visit once a week or once a fortnight anyway.
You know, I've also heard that people who go, oh, I feel a bit sick, like might have the flu, and they'll go to, or not even the flu, you know, bad cold, whatever, and they go to the hospitals. And what happens, they're clogging up the system, the wait time, you go, oh, just go to a medical centre or somewhere like that.
And that's it. You know, like, I must admit, Maitland Hospital does have an after-hours GP connected to it. So if you go and sign in down there and you're not sick enough, they'll send you upstairs to it. But it's only till, like, 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
But that's just, like, again, that's an after-hours GP that anybody can go to.
Right.
But if you rock into the ED and you're not sick enough, they'll send you upstairs to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've actually ended up there with a sprained ankle with my daughter, but they did a quick x-ray. It was fine. So then they sent me up there. So that's a fast-tracking thing. But, yeah, I just believe that anybody that turns up at the hospital, that it's a non... And one of my girlfriends that actually works in triaging, her best thing is when someone walks to the counter, they say, what's your accident or emergency? And they'll say, oh, I've had this flu for a week. And she says, well, you know, what's your accident or emergency? Because it is a accident and emergency.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a doctor's surgery.
Yeah,
and that's what people need to get through their heads.
Yeah, good point. All right, Michelle, thanks very much for calling.
You're welcome.
Have a good one, okay? Yeah, you too. We've got Pete from the Central Coast. G'day, Pete.
Hey, how you going, Paddy?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Good, mate. Good. Good.
Mate, now, we're looking at the story, hospital overcrowding, wait times worst in Tasmania, the Territories, and wanted to know, are you a hospital worker? What is the situation? We found out from Michelle from Maitland, she was telling us why there is a backlog sometimes with, you know, 6 hour wait, sometimes even longer. Mate, now, you've worked in the hospital system?
Yeah, mate, I worked in... New South Wales Hospital for 11 years doing security.
Oh, how was that, mate?
Yeah, had its good times and had its bad. When there's a backlog of patients, it can also cause patients to kick off as well, especially when they've got mental health issues and they're waiting.
Right.
So the longer the wait, especially when they're mental health, it stirs the patients up quite severely.
You know what? I don't even, I think even just as a just going there waiting because you become anxious and you go, oh, come on. And you get frustrated. You just get frustrated. That's what happens.
Yeah. They don't have to have mental health issue either. Just everyday person, just that waiting time.
Yeah.
You can pick them. You know, you watch them, you know, either lying there or sitting there, and you can see that they're getting angrier and angrier. And before you know it, you end up having to deal with the situation.
Now, did you see that footage? Oh, it was about a month ago. What happened, I think, in that Melbourne hospital? Did you see that?
Mate, there's not much I haven't seen, you know. But, you know, the security system in hospitals needs a big overhaul. You know, you've got hierarchies in twos and fives making decisions that have never spent a day in the life of a security guard in a hospital at all.
Was it 8 years that you spent as a security guard?
11.
11, right. Mate, from when you started to the end, how was it? What did you see change?
We were outsourced. So even though we worked for New South Wales Health, we were outsourced and we were taken over by an outside company. Mm. I won't name that company.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's really bad because, like I said, you've got people that make decisions on what, you know, depending on what hospital you're at, you've got people making decisions on what you can and can't do in regards to restraining a patient and different issues like that. And these people that are making these decisions aren't the ones that are doing the job, you know. And it doesn't just affect the security guards, it affects the nursing staff. And therefore, the decisions that are being made, the nursing staff are getting injured, guards are getting injured, you know, and the amount of guards that are off on, say, A, stress leave, or B, due to being injured by a patient, or gets quite high at times. And, you know, especially when, you know, in regards to the waiting times and the patients kick off and the nurses get injured, and the nurses, you know, like, I've seen nurses go off on stress leave because, you know, they've been assaulted, and therefore they don't want to be around that at all.
Mate, you wouldn't.
But, especially with all the ice out there at the moment too. Like, I was still down for 3 months for restraining a patient correctly, you know. And then I was found guilty on probability, and I was found guilty on probability by some lady that didn't have the faintest of a clue of what we did.
Go through, yeah.
You know, and I said to her, when's the last time you ever restrained a patient? And I said, don't bother answering. I said, because I know you haven't.
Yeah.
I said, but you can sit there behind a desk and tell me that I did the wrong thing. I said, if you think I and believe that I've done the wrong thing, will you tell me how I should have restrained the patient? And I said, you can't. I said, you can't because you don't know. I said, but you're the ones that are making the decisions on how we're to handle the patient.
Pete, to protect the nurses and everyone else, should they put on more security guards or give you more power? What's the go?
Both. You need more security guards in certain hospitals. So some hospitals are worse than others. And the guards do need more powers. The guards are, like, the powers that we have now with a security license, well, no one will have one. You've got the same powers of what we've got, which is sweet bugger all, basically.
And as you said, you restrained a patient and got sacked, suspended for 3 months for it.
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
Mate,
and when I went to the meeting over it, she found me guilty on probability. I said, what do you mean I'm found guilty on probability? She said, you probably did and you probably didn't.
Oh, you're joking.
And she said, I don't like your attitude in regards to your answer about the whole thing. I said, why? She said, because in your statement, you said you'd do it again. I said, yeah, I would. I said, I'd do it again because I didn't do anything wrong to start off with.
Yeah. And you're protecting the nurses and the doctors or whoever. Mate, have you found it in the last couple of years, did it get worse because of the drugs that are out there?
Yeah, it did. It did. And there's a lot more mental health out there these days.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you why. You know, there could be multiple reasons why, but you know, it's just the way it is, and it's getting worse. You know, I still know the blokes that work there, and they just keep telling me all the time it's getting worse and worse, and they won't put more staff on.
Yeah.
And with the lack of guards, you know, with such a massive hospital that we work in, the guards can only be in so many places at once. You know, you may have three or four things kicking off at the one time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've only got so many guards on the shift, and they can't be everywhere.
No.
You know, and we used to carry batons and handcuffs. And granted, I only probably pulled my baton three times over the 11 years that I was there. But the handcuffs were quite handy. And the handcuffs are only used as a last resort.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did use my cuffs, I don't know, probably over 11 years, probably 50 times maybe.
Mm.
But they were only used as a last resort. And using the cuffs, you had to have a very good reason as to why you use them. And every time I used them, I had a proper reason as to why they were used.
Mate, there might be some other people now in the security industry, but there'd be nothing worse going to work too if you're a nurse or a doctor, or whatever, and being fearful because of what you might face. That would be a terrible situation, and others might be, you know, in that now. But I really thank you, Pete, for giving us a call today, buddy.
No worries, mate.
And I've got to tell you, I've pulled my baton more than three times in 11 years.
Oh, really?
Right. Yep.
Anyway, yeah, mine was extendable.
I can't say the same. All right, Pete, you have a good one, mate.
Right, you too.
See you, mate. State of Origin, Queensland 18 in rugby league, defeated New South Wales 12. It was only for pride because New South Wales already had won the Shield in the first two games. Billy Slater was named man of the match. A lot of people are saying, oh, or man of the series, I should say, and man of the match. Cameron, as I said on Facebook, Billy Slater, man of the series, that'll do me. He played two out of three bloody games. What a flipping joke. You might want to have a comment. We'll get some comments very soon from Sam on Facebook about electricity prices. But at the moment, we have got Louise, and she's from Sydney. Hey, Lou.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, really well. How are you going?
Very well, thank you.
Now, what are you calling about?
Initially, I was calling about, like, in response to the call you had not long ago, who's the security at the hospital.
Oh, yeah, that was Pete from the Central Coast. He was a security guard for 11 years at this hospital, and he just had to give it away. He said certain measures have to be put up in place because of nurses and all staff. There's a element of risk when it comes to danger because of the treating these patients.
There is most definitely. I'm a nurse and I work in Sydney. I was working at a major hospital in Western Sydney for 10 years or so, and I now work in the city in a smaller hospital, but both government hospitals. And the security guards employed by the hospital have absolutely no power whatsoever in relation to protecting us as staff against the patients. He was correcting what he was saying about not being able to restrain patients if they become aggressive. They're not actually allowed to touch the patient. They have no more powers than what we do as nurses to protect ourselves in that regard.
So what do you do?
Well, a lot of the hospitals are now employing private company security and have them, like some of the hospital that I worked at previously has a private security guard in the emergency department. But for people who are on the wards and you know, in the clinics and things like that, there's absolutely no protection. I've been spat on by patients. We've had patients who've put their hands and fists through the walls. But we can't actually physically do anything to restrain a patient. You need to have paperwork signed by the doctors, and that's normally if a patient is an inpatient in the hospital. But for patients who are outpatients or in emergency or things like that, there's absolutely no protection for us at all from the hospital security.
And Lou, how long have you been a nurse for?
In total, 13 years.
Have you seen it progressively get worse?
Oh, most definitely. Not so much. Oh, both grads. So with the security guards that work for the hospital, if, you know, this might be a bit unfair thing to say, but if there were an actual emergency where they needed to move quickly, it wouldn't happen. A lot of them are, you know, prone to doing desk work or walking around the parking, you know, to make sure no one's parked illegally or stuff like that. They don't actually routinely monitor the wards and things like that. I guess that's why hospitals have moved to employing private security guards, that there is a presence in the hospital and in the ward and in front of patients so they can see that.
When you're at the bigger hospital, did you used to fear going to work sometimes?
Not so much fear, and I don't know if it's fear because I actually, like, I do love what I do, and I do it for the right reasons. So there was no fear, but there's frustration going to work because there's no support from, you know, people to protect us. And where I worked, obviously, there was a wide ethnic population, and everybody's got their own things that they think are okay to do when they're angry or when they're upset, and how to speak to people when they don't get their own way. And that's just the society, unfortunately, that we live in. But it's difficult to work day to day interacting with these people and not knowing how they will react. And I think a lot of things get escalated due to language barrier and expectations that aren't properly understood. So it's a challenging scenario because we are a more developing society. And, you know, with the wide range of people that, you know, we serve and who are our patients, it's difficult to try and get that respect, I guess, not respect, but in a way respect for what we do and our position that we hold in regards to them as, you know, helping them and things like that.
Louise, how do they, nurses or security or whoever, how do you restrain an unruly patient?
Physically, you're not allowed to touch them. Like if they're getting aggressive or anything else like that, you're not allowed to touch them. What the security has to do is to call the police. Like they can speak to a patient if they're being aggressive in a ward or in emergency department,
yeah.
And they can ask the patient to leave, but they can't physically restrain a patient who's going off or becoming violent or aggressive. If you have a patient who's aggressive on the ward, you need to have paperwork filled out that's agreed to by the family and the doctors looking after the team to physically restrain the patient, whether it be for their own safety or the safety of the staff. But in the hospital system at the moment, like when I started nursing, there was a lot more nurses on the floor. And so for patients who needed that extra attention, that extra care to have somebody there all the time, there was the staff for that. But now, you know, cutbacks and, you know, a lot of freezes on employment in the hospitals, they just don't have the extra staff to be able to supply one nurse for one particular patient, which we used to call specialing. So you find now in the hospital, if a patient, whether they be aggressive due to, you know, mental illness or aggressive due to the fact that they've got Alzheimer's or something else like that, a lot of the time that's relegated to the junior nursing staff or the nursing students who are on practical on the ward at the time.
So if someone was going mad, an accident, an emergency, you can't restrain them.
Nope.
So how do you stop that person?
You need to try verbal aggression minimization, they call it.
Verbal minimization.
Aggression minimization.
Oh right, aggression.
And that's basically just trying to pander to the patient and calm them down. Which again, it only. You know, it lets them think that that's an okay thing to happen because there's no ramifications and there's no negative outcome for them that they can act that way and they're not going to get punished in a sense. I guess when it escalates to a point, the police are called. But again, like, they can't physically restrain a patient.
So therefore, if they were attacking someone, you'd have to step in, though,
you'd have to do it. But, I've got friends who are security guards who work at hospitals, not the hospital that I worked at Western City, but other ones,
yeah.
who physically restrained a patient who was becoming aggressive. And like your last caller, he was put on leave for, you know, 4 months or something while they investigated the situation. And then he was, you know, his job was no longer there.
Yeah. So what do you believe as a nurse to protect the patients, the other patients, the patients themselves and all the staff, more security guards or what would you implement?
More security guards with a greater presence but also more powers for them. But I guess in doing that you run the risk of having these power-hungry people who, you know, want to exert their own power amongst others and you risk patient safety because you've just, like, got these people that, like what you have in the nightclubs at the moment, like there's a lot of security who work in the nightclubs who are there because they want to, you know, make themselves feel empowered by the position that they hold.
Mm.
And I guess that by having those kind of security guards in the hospital, I'd be concerned about them using unnecessary force when it wasn't warranted. But I guess maybe if they had security there who were under the instruction or direction of nursing staff who are with the patient day in, day out, then that might minimise it, but it's just too difficult to say you know, what the kind of what the answer is to fix the problem.
So security guards at nightclub doors must have come under a different agreement or whatever compared to security guards in hospitals.
I'd say so.
Yeah, or different rules or regulations.
They still have the same security license, they just don't have the same powers.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's a private enterprise rather than the public hospital system.
All right. Well, listen, a security guard might give us a call and let us know. What are the powers do you have at a nightclub? That'd be interesting to know compared to the ones that we've been finding out at the hospital that have no powers whatsoever. Hey, Lou, thank you so much for calling.
No worries. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Lou, that's Louise in Sydney. We've got Warren in Melbourne who's given us a call on 133353 across the Triple M network. G'day, Woz.
G'day, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, really well. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. That was an interesting call. I actually rang up to speak about relocations, but I actually used to be a security guard in a hospital back in New Zealand.
Mate, what's it like over there compared, like from when you've heard Louise and also Pete from the Central Coast saying that these security guards at hospitals have got no power, was that the same in New Zealand?
No, it wasn't the same. When I was there, and this is going back 10, 15 years ago, we were allowed to restrain people that needed to be restrained. The company I worked for was a proper security company. It wasn't working for the hospital as employed by the hospital. I was employed by an outside company, but we worked inside the hospital, and we had completely different training to being able to restrain people, because you couldn't use the same forces that, say, a bouncer does in the nightclubs.
Yeah.
So we had to know how to restrain somebody who might be an old person or someone frail without hurting them.
So do any of the security guards in these hospitals, they wouldn't be allowed tasers, would they? Or a bit extreme?
We didn't have anything like that. We had no cuffs, we had no batons, no nothing. It was just by your own arms and legs, you know, being able to restrain people. You didn't have any equipment whatsoever.
And was, how did you find it? Like, that's what I said to Pete when we spoke to him earlier on. He'd been there 11 years as a security guard at the hospital, and he said it just progressively got worse, the incidents that happened. Did you find that when you were a security guard in New Zealand at the hospital?
Yeah, there was, it depended on nights and what was going on around in the city and that sort of stuff. Ultimately, it was fairly quiet where I was.
Yeah.
I was at Christchurch in New Zealand, and most of the time it was fairly quiet, most of the people in there, our office was based in the emergency ward, which is where most of the trouble happened because you get the drunks coming.
Yep.
But most of the time I was there, we didn't actually need to do. I never restrained one person.
Oh, wow.
But there was other people that I worked with that had restrained people.
Yeah.
I found it a boring job, but anyway.
is Christchurch home for you?
I was actually brought up in in Dunedin, which is 350k further south.
Yeah.
Christchurch was where I was living when we left.
Yeah.
New Zealand will always be home, because that's where my roots come from. But yeah. Australia is now my new home.
Yeah.
We have no intentions of moving on. We came here to live here and work here, and we're actually going through the process of me becoming a citizen.
Oh, cool.
So we came over here with no intention of going back.
You're right. I want to know, with Christchurch, has it recovered since the earthquake? Or
not really.
Right.
I was there a year ago. My partner goes back every 6 months, and just the devastation that's there. There's places that they still don't know what they can do with it, and it's pretty. When I went back a year ago, I left in 2011 after the February quake, which killed 186 people, and I went back and I was just gobsmacked at how where there used to be buildings that were iconic are no longer there.
Yeah.
It's just an empty block of land. You can see what they're planning on doing and how it's going to look in the future.
Yep.
But it's going to take a long, long time. I mean, they still have quakes now.
Yeah. What the people, like you, clearly your relatives live still there. Do they fear living in Christchurch still, because it's just so prone to earthquakes?
Yeah, well, Christchurch wasn't actually really that prone. You might get a few little shocks and that sort of stuff, but you never got anything as big as what it was. And when they predicted that there was going to be a big one, they predicted it was going to be up in the Alps. And the problem that they have with Christchurch is there's a whole lot of new fault lines that they didn't know existed that had been there, but that's what set off the quakes that we had, and we weren't really prepared for them, was that there's all these quakes, all these fault lines that run through the city that
seismologists.
Those fellas, yeah. they didn't even know the fault lines that triggered off even existed.
Wow.
So, the first quake that we had, which was 2010, that set off, was about 15 k's out of the city. But the second one, and that one was 15 k's deep. The second one that we had, which killed the people, was 5 k deep, but that was based in Littleton, which is just basically on the other side of the Port Hills from Christchurch. So probably only about 20 k's from the central city.
Wow, mate! I still recall the footage of that, of just mud bubbling from the ground.
Oh, it's unbelievable. We when it went off the first time, we went out into our backyard and it looked like you had a burst water main. So I ran out the front and turned the water main off. Didn't make any difference. There's still water bubbling up out of the ground. And then when you went and walked in it, you lost your shoes. And it was that silt stuff. Now, the Christchurch was built on a riverbed from years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
And it's all that silt that makes it unstable. They did a test that was shown on, I think it's on YouTube, I'm not 100% sure, but saw this video where they showed what happens with the silt. And they picked up some silt off the ground that had risen up out of the earth after the quakes and put it into a wheelbarrow, and they run down the road with this wheelbarrow. Now, originally, when they first put it in, it was all just the silt. It just looked like you put sand in the wheelbarrow. And about 5 metres down the road, and it was all starting to turn to water.
Turning to water?
Yeah.
Wow.
As it vibrates,
it turns
into water.
Well, because
So when all that turns to water, all that water come up out of the ground, it brought the silt up with it, and it's pretty unbelievable why it happened.
Very much so. Now, we were talking...
time of my life.
Oh, mate. So were you there when the earthquake happened?
When the big one happened, the one that killed all the people in the February?
Yes.
I was on the back. I was doing LPG deliveries to houses with the 90-kilo gas cylinders. Had a little rigid truck with 40 gas cylinders on the back. At the time, I had my hand on the strap to release the back four cylinders, and the truck went up on two wheels.
The earth was moving that much?
Yeah. Earlier on, to give you an idea what it was like, after the first quake we had in 2010, it was the Monday after it happened on Saturday. And on the Monday, I went to work, and I was driving my truck down the road. I was about to turn into an intersection, and the truck was fully loaded with the LPG, and the road started, it just started bending in front of you. I thought I was on an LSD. It looked like it was a 3 metre swell out in the ocean.
Holy hell.
That was the road. It was like, holy shit. And and I was only doing about 20 k's an hour, about to turn this corner, and the front end of the truck just started bouncing. And I started bouncing straight towards another truck that was waiting to turn. I thought, this isn't going to end well. And I was just preparing myself for having an impact. And all of a sudden, it just went flat. It just stopped.
Jeez.
And the front end of the truck gripped, and we went around the corner.
And you said to yourself, did I have that many beers last night? Jeez.
like I said, I've never took LSD, but what I can imagine an LSD trip would be like, it was unbelievable. So,
mate, that would be interesting if other people, like if you've gone through what happened with a natural disaster. Mate, that's just spooky stuff.
even now we hear helicopters flying around, and especially if it's the Air Force helicopters,
yeah.
They trigger off memories for us. My partner can't stand car alarms.
Because so many car alarms went off on that day?
Yeah, well, our daughter went to school in the right in the city, near the cathedral.
Yeah.
And my partner jumped in her car, and she was on her way home. Then she thought, "I'll go and pick up the daughter," because it was lunchtime, so the kids were outside, and the school that they had, being in the CBD, had no playgrounds or anything. So the streets and Colombo Street and around the square was basically their playground. And so my partner went in looking for her daughter, and she was the only person who was going in towards the CBD where everyone else was going out. But she heard all these alarms going off, and when she looked to her left to see what was where the car park building had actually pancaked. So all the floors were actually one on top of the other, and only being held up by the roofs of the cars that were able to actually hold them up. But yeah, and wow. It was just constant noise. So she gets that noise from the from car alarms, and she freaks out from that. We hear helicopters flying over at night. If you hear a helicopter flying over at night, because when we moved house close to the CBD to try and save some money to come over here before the second one, and when the second one hit, they had helicopters flying over the CBD with big those searchlights on. Mm. They were patrolling, looking for looters that were going around ripping people off.
Mate, what was it like in the days after, when everything's destroyed? I can imagine power would have been off, water would have been off. What was it? How was that?
It was absolute bedlam. I worked for a company called Contact Energy, which did power and all that sort of stuff, but we were on the LPG side of it. And we were given the same powers of any emergency vehicles. So we just put our beacons on, and we would go anywhere we needed to. We could drive the same as the police if we needed to get somewhere, because we had to go and get the LPG away from places where, you know, we had to go and shut things off and all that sort of stuff. So it was kind of cool for us, because we were allowed to go everywhere. And all the places that were blocked off to the public, we were actually able to go in and have a look around. I got to go into the CBD when it was all barricaded off and where all the buildings were falling down. And looking at footage on TV and seeing pictures and that sort of stuff was just doesn't really get it across. It's being there and the sheer bedlam that goes on afterwards, because you jump in your car to go to the supermarket, for example, you want to get some food, you have to think about which way can I go.
Yeah, yeah.
Bridges weren't able to be used, and our daily job doing the LPG, I'd go out to an area that I'd be going, and it's like, well, can I go that way? Can the trucks, will the bridge that I'm going over take the weight of the truck?
Oh,
and it was a total unknown, you know. Here, I drive B-doubles now, and interstate, and you come up to a bridge, and you've got an idea. It tells you whether there's a weight limit on the on the road or the bridge and that sort of stuff.
The GVM, I think.
Yeah. Well, the GVM's the vehicle, but you have a load limit on the roads.
Right.
You know, it might be 8.5 ton load limit,
yeah.
But you can't take a vehicle heavier than 8.5 ton on it. And back then, with all the earthquakes, you had no idea of whether the bridge was actually going to take the weight, even if it was rated to take 60 or 70 ton or whatever, which we didn't have. But anyway, if it was a normal bridge that didn't have a rating on it, which would be open, you didn't know whether you actually go on there and is the bridge going to collapse underneath you? Is the road going to collapse underneath?
Yeah.
I've got a photo on my laptop somewhere of a little one of those little trucks that you can drive on your car license. And he's been driving down the road, and the road's just opened up underneath him.
Oh, a Pantex truck or something like that.
Yeah. And the bottom half of the truck is down in this hole.
Jeez.
Holy shit. And we come over here, we moved over to Mackay, and everyone's going on about potholes, and I was like, yeah, seriously?
That's not a pothole.
if you lose a truck in the hole, then you've got a pothole.
I've got to do these ads. Mate, it's been so nice talking to you. I know you're going to ring about something else, but that was just, I just find that just riveting stuff to hear, and you go, holy shit, that's what you go. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like, I mean, everyone, when we moved, we were moving over here, we were moving to Mackay, and everyone's saying, oh, why are you going to Mackay? You know, they have cyclones, they have floods, they have all that sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, at least you get a warning with that. With the earthquakes, you don't know.
Nothing.
And we'd go to bed at 11 o'clock at night, and then you'd jump into bed, you'd just be starting to doze off to sleep, and then all of a sudden the bed would start shaking. Before it started shaking, you'd actually hear, it sounded like a train coming through your house.
That's
freaky.
Yeah, that bed's not shaking for the right reasons either, is it?
Copy that. quick shout out to me mates that are listening. Old Steve from Easters, who's coming down to Melbourne. I'll catch up with him somewhere tomorrow.
All right, mate. Thanks for the call, Wazza. And ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the lovely Jess.
Thanks, yes. Buddy.
Oh, how's it going out on the coal face?
Ooh, it's good. It's warm.
Yeah. Now, 2 days to go.
Until I leave this country.
Was that in time?
I don't know. It's probably terrible. I'm sorry to anyone who heard that.
No, it was brilliant. Because right. Lebanon and then Dubai.
Dubai, yes.
How good is that?
Pretty good.
Are you packed and everything ready to go?
Not at all, mate. No. I haven't even started.
Isn't it terrible? These people who say, it's, you know, like with Christmas, people say, I got all my Christmas shopping done.
They're the worst people.
Oh, you go, shut your mouth. Seriously, that's what I think. I'm there. Stop skiding. Same when I go away.
I'm always on the day.
Yeah, me too.
To the second.
Me too. Oh, it'd be so great. It'll be so great. Listen, a couple of things that we're going to look at coming up, and then I've got you in here for a few things. Now, I spoke about the Thailand man captured a video of a snake he found in his bedroom that had partially swallowed a piece of his wife's lingerie.
Oh, terrifying.
Yeah, and the video shows him pulling on the snake's tail, causing it to regurgitate the lingerie. I didn't know how that worked. Yeah. He said, Sukdar said he safely released the snake outside of his home. Have you ever had a close encounter with a snake or a dangerous animal?
I've seen a snake once in Lebanon, of all places.
Is that all? Have you seen one around here?
No. Why? Okay. Should I? Am I missing something?
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm great. I don't know what I'd do. I don't know if I would. It would go one of two ways. I'd run out screaming and flailing, or I'd just get out a knife.
You know what? I can handle spiders. Snakes, I'm not a fan of.
Oh, spiders creep me out.
Do you really? My sister's like that.
They're just ugly.
Yeah, she suffers from arachnophobia big time.
Really?
Yeah, massive, absolutely. If you put one in front of her, she'd cry. Mm. It's that bad. But snakes, I don't mind. But I've never, snakes, you just go, oh, yeah.
Is that all you go? Oh, yeah. What could kill you, Patty? What are you all yearing at? It's terrifying.
I do like the videos that you see put up where the snakes are in the house and they've had to get a snake catcher in and all that sort of stuff. There, look, maybe you've had an encounter, a snake encounter.
So scary.
Yeah, they are, you know. And that number to call, 133353. But this is why there's three now. Jason on Facebook, he said, roughly 15 years ago, I was on $5 an hour as an apprentice baker. Thank you for that. But Scott, now, you know how, and I'm blaming you for this.
Okay.
Because you put my banana on the Night Shift Facebook page.
Yes. Vegan hot dog.
Yeah.
Folks, Patty eats bananas in hot dogs. Did you put any kind of condiment, sprinkle of sugar, Nutella? Well, it's a bit dry, no. Patty.
What I did, and because you had the bun, and I separated the bun with my fingers and quite right down the middle, and I just put a banana and just, I walked around and just
mortifying.
Just said, what are you eating? I said, this is the vegan's hot dog. Anyway, you put that on Facebook, but this is where I've got you in. You know what Scott said on Facebook?
Yeah, go on.
Scott has said, can I talk how Scott would have gone?
Yeah,
I think.
go.
I've turned off till Luke gets back because this guy's a That's what Scott has said.
I've been so good at deleting all the bad comments. That one must have just slipped through.
You are terrible.
I mean,
Muriel.
What? That's the only one.
Oh, no, there's others.
No, I'm just kidding.
Can't believe Scott thinks I'm up. And I'm there. What was he looking through the window anyway for? Scotty. Why don't you ring Scotty and have a chat?
Man up. Yeah. Say it to his face.
Yeah, Scotty. Yeah. Am I that much of a do you think?
No, thanks, no, Jess. Really. All the comments were so positive.
Thank
that
you.
Really is the only one, Patty.
Yeah, good on you, Jason. Well, you wouldn't have heard because he's turned off till Lukey
that
gets
is
back.
So true. Yeah, he has turned off.
Yeah, and Lukey is back on Monday, everyone. But I want to know here, Jess, while it's really cold to don Speedo's right.
Yeah, at the minute. Yeah, this is swimming where we are.
Yeah, a new study. Yeah, where you're going to? It's not
it's
going
to be hot.
Oh, hot baby.
Summer, really
oh,
warm.
Yeah, you is all summer gear taken?
That's all I'll be taking. It's gonna be. It's like 35 degrees every day. Dubai's gonna be. I've been in Dubai before and it's 55.
Oh, wow.
That's gross, though. That's
yeah, hot. That is too hot. That's... Anyway, this new study has revealed that 99% of women wouldn't want to be seen with their partner if they were wearing Speedos, right?
Rightfully so.
Don't like them? What about your man? Does he wear them?
No, board shorts.
Would he be able to pull Speedos off, though, if he was to put them on?
Well, yeah, I think anyone can pull anything off, right? If you're confident and you want to rock it, but I don't know how I feel about Speedos. I mean, it's very, can be confronting at times.
See, look, if you hung like a donkey, I'd be
Patty.
Wearing.
All right, go on.
If I was hung like a donkey, I'd be
no.
wearing. All right.
So you think you can wear them if you look a certain way?
Yeah, if you're massive in that department, I'd be wearing them all the time.
No.
Seriously? Can I tell you my donkey?
I'm not into it.
Can I tell you my donkey joke?
If you must.
Could I get away with it? Do you hear about the bisexual donkey? Can I do that one?
Should you run it past me off air first, maybe?
I'll run it past you first.
I have HR meetings all the time.
Right. Anyway.
I don't need another one.
Now, the swimming undies aren't the only despised items. Leather trousers and Crocs. Oh.
I hate Crocs. They are. No offense, but, you know.
If you're a Croc wearer, you ought to be ashamed.
They just. Someone here wears them, and when they walk in, and they take them off, and it smells.
Yeah, because it's.
It's poor ventilation.
Which
is ironic because they have holes in them. I don't get it.
It's the leather on the sole of the foot. But are they supposed to be therapeutic? Is that why?
They're meant to be like walking on clouds.
They're
supposed to be so comfortable, really good for your foot.
What about when you see father and son wear them? Oh, that's...
Matching Crocs.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Worse, though?
Oh, Crocs or Speedos?
Or Speedos.
Crocs. Seriously, Crocs. I'd wear Speedos.
Crocs are bad.
Yeah. Do you reckon Crocs? I reckon Speedos. Look.
You think Speedos
are
worse?
No. Crocs. I'd wear Speedos than Crocs. I just hate Crocs. I would. And if Kirsten ever bought me a pair, I'd just go,
Okay, what if Kirsten was like, I found this shoe. It's so comfortable. I got to wear it.
No.
Absolutely. Would you make her take it back?
Absolutely. I wouldn't. I would say no.
What about freedom of expression? What if she wants to? It makes her happy.
You look weird if you wear Crocs, I reckon. It makes you look weird.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I do. What about if you, what do you reckon? Women or blokes? Does your missus hate blokes? What about the blokes who mow the yards in Speedos?
You're kidding. You've seen a bloke mow?
Yeah, bloke around the corner does.
What?
In summer, only in summer. And you just go, and he's as brown as a Panadol and he wears Speedos. He wears Speedos on there.
Well, maybe he's trying to work on the tan.
Oh.
Maybe he's trying to go from a Panadol to an Oreo.
Well, he should work on it more. But that'd be interesting to find out. 133353, does your missus hate Speedos? Do you love Speedos? You might be a bloke who just loves wearing them.
Well, tell us why.
Yes.
Why do you love Speedos? Is it the freedom of it, less fabric on the skin.
They might dry quicker than board shorts. That's the reason why you might wear them. But what about also Crocs? I want to eat Croc wearers. Oh, fair dinkum.
Well, we've just paid them out. I don't think they're going to call
us. They probably won't. They probably won't.
I mean, we're not judging you. No. They're just not for me.
Not at all. Not at all. Exactly.
The rubber, it makes me uncomfortable. It's just that squish. You know what I'm saying?
I'm hearing you.
Too much squish.
I am hearing you, Jess. Give us a call. Let us know. 133353, The Offspring. Triple M.